both sides have now rested their cases in Derek Chauvin's murder trial. In the final days of testimony, medical experts clashed over the cause of George Floyd's death.
The issue now for the jury is to really parse all of this testimony and figure out for themselves who they found to be most credible.
We'll talk about what they heard and how the trial has been impacted by the death of Dante Wright. And stocks rose on bank earnings and positive economic news today. We'll have more on that. Plus, why travelers need to worry about more than full flights and sold-out hotels this summer. It's Thursday, April 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. It looks like more people are getting back to work, seeing more income, and spending more. Retail sales jumped by nearly 10% in March, according to data released today by the Commerce Department. It was the largest monthly gain since last May, during the initial recovery from the first COVID-19 lockdowns. Separately, the Labor Department says jobless claims fell to 576,000 last week, down 200,000 from the week before. And the government also reported that factory output rose by 2.7%, helping overall industrial production rebound. Economists say the boost is coming from a combination of stimulus money, the ramped-up vaccination rollout, and businesses reopening. And a slew of earnings today. Citigroup posted sharply higher first-quarter profit, but the bank announced it will be shutting down most of its consumer banking operations in Asia, Europe, and the Middle East. It's one of new chief executive Jane Fraser's first big moves at the bank's helm. Bank of America's profit doubled after it released money it had set aside for bad loans. Its shares dropped 3.6%, however, after it reported a jump in expenses. BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, announced that its quarterly profit rose nearly 50%, and United Health Group posted a larger profit and stronger revenue. The economic news and those strong earnings reports sent markets higher and the Dow to a new record. The blue chip index closed above 34,000 for the first time ever. The S&P 500 also closed at a new record, up 1.1%, and the NASDAQ gained 1.3% as big tech stocks rallied. As we reported this morning, the U.S. has levied a broad range of sanctions on Russia for Moscow's alleged election interference, a widespread hacking campaign, and other activities. Daniel Nassau, a national security editor in our Washington bureau, says one of the new executive orders targets Russian debt.
It prohibits U.S. financial institutions from buying new bonds directly from Russia's central bank, its finance ministry, and the country's sovereign wealth fund. And that is intended to constrain one of Russia's main means of funding its government. And so the White House says that sends a signal that the U.S. is going to impose strategic and economically impactful costs on Russia if it continues its destabilizing international actions.
A spokeswoman for Russia's foreign ministry told reporters that a rebuff from Moscow was, quote, inevitable. Russia has denied meddling in U.S. elections and denied a role in the SolarWinds hack. And federal health regulators have identified a number of people who have gotten COVID-19 after being fully vaccinated. There were approximately 5,800 cases among the more than 66 million Americans who have been fully vaccinated, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That represents 0.008%. Officials say that's a reminder that vaccines, while highly effective, are not 100%, and even those who have been vaccinated should continue taking precautions. Coming up after the break, we'll talk about the final testimony in the murder trial of former police officer Derek Chauvin, ahead of closing arguments next week.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
After nearly 3 weeks of testimony, both sides rested their cases in the trial of Derek Chauvin, a former Minneapolis police officer charged with murdering George Floyd. Closing arguments are set to begin on Monday. The judge dismissed the jury until then, telling them to prepare a bag for their deliberations, during which they will be sequestered. The trial has been unfolding amid tight security in the city and rising tensions over the police-involved shooting of a black man, Dante Wright, during a traffic stop on Sunday. Our Erin Aylworth has been following the trial and the unrest in Minneapolis this week, and she joins me now. Hi, Erin. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
So today, for the first time during this trial, we heard from former police officer Derek Chauvin himself, who has pleaded not guilty to the charges.
I will invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege today.
Erin, tell us about Chauvin's decision not to testify.
We were pretty much expecting that he wouldn't testify, you know, because in getting on the stand, he would open himself up to lots of questions from the prosecution. So when he invoked his Fifth Amendment privilege in court, that was, you know, very much the expected course of action. I should also say it was one of the only times we've heard him speak in court. The only other instances that we had heard from Chauvin in his voice actually came from body cam video that was played during the weeks of testimony.
So both sides have now rested their cases. The prosecution wrapped up earlier this week and the defense just this afternoon. Erin, tell us more about how they concluded.
The defense rested after a relatively short period of making their case, just 2 days of testimony for the defense. And that actually comes after essentially 2 weeks of testimony for the prosecution. And both sides, you know, were really trying to make their different cases, which were for the prosecution, that George Floyd died because he was restrained by police officers, and for the defense that George Floyd died because he had underlying heart conditions and a history of drug use.
So, Erin, over the past 2 weeks, both sides have called medical witnesses. Some work directly on the case, like Hennepin County Medical Examiner Andrew Baker, who conducted George Floyd's autopsy, and others like David Fowler, the former chief medical examiner of Maryland, and Martin Tobin, a pulmonologist, were brought in as experts. How did each side use the medical expert testimony to make their case?
It was really a battle of experts in this testimony. The experts brought by the prosecution essentially agreed that George Floyd died because he was restrained by police. But they differed a little bit on exactly why that restraint killed him. Martin Tobin, the pulmonologist, essentially said that it was because of low oxygen levels, while Dr. Baker really thought that Mr. Floyd, just couldn't take the restraint because of his heart. And meanwhile, the medical examiner brought in by the defense testified that he thought it was really George Floyd's heart issues and his drug use that caused his death. And interestingly, though, he said that he would have left the cause of death undetermined because there were so many things that were happening. The issue now for the jury is to really parse all of this testimony and figure out for themselves who they found to be most credible and which explanation makes the most sense to them. I think that will really drive their decision on the verdict.
And next week on Monday, we will begin hearing closing arguments in the trial. What can we expect?
Well, with closing arguments, obviously you are going to hear both the prosecution and defense make, you know, one last pitch for each of their cases, and really just try to bring home to the jury why the jury should, you know, agree with that case. And again, that will leave the jury with the challenge of deciding which way to decide this issue. And then what we're going to see is the jury then being sequestered to make this decision. And, you know, the timing of that is quite uncertain. And I think, you know, leaves Minneapolis and its surrounding communities on edge awaiting this decision and whatever it might bring.
And as we've been reporting, this has been a tense week. Of course, the trial is taking place amid tight security, and it's also happening in the wake of a police-involved shooting. Aaron, you've been covering several nights of unrest in and around Minneapolis. How is the community responding to all of this? What are you hearing?
Dante Wright's shooting on Sunday brought up all of these emotions, I think, that the community, you know, had felt when George Floyd died, and put them on high alert a little bit sooner than everyone was expecting. I think everyone has been anticipating, you know, feelings of anxiety and trauma, and Dante Wright's shooting, you know, in the last few days just accelerated that.
As we head into the weekend, Aaron, what are you hearing from people in and around the community?
You know, what I'm hearing is that people are upset. They're angry that another Black man has been killed by police. You know, this is very much, again, an echo of George Floyd. And George Floyd wasn't even the first, deadly police interaction in these communities. They also had Philando Castile, they had Jamar Clark. And so a lot of people have been asking me, you know, gosh, will this ever end? You know, so many have seen George Floyd's death as this inflection point that prompted conversation about police reform and, you know, and race and policing. But Dante Wright's death has just made them question, you know, how much have we really moved forward, and, you know, and how long will we be in essentially what they think is a battle for, you know, for justice and their rights.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Aaron Aylworth joining me from Minneapolis. For more coverage, head to WSJ.com. And finally, a lot of people have started planning their summer vacations. But before you book your flights and hotel room, make sure you factor in a ride from the airport. Rental car companies sold off a large chunk of their fleet, hundreds of thousands of vehicles, to survive the pandemic. And they've run into issues buying new cars because of factory delays. Our Middle Seat columnist Scott McCartney says be sure to plan in advance.
People really need to think of the car first when they, particularly for the summer, when they're making travel plans. So it may be that you're going to take a different flight because of when you can get a car. It may be that you're going to go to a different airport because of the availability of cars. So, you know, the car is often an afterthought to a trip, but I think that probably needs to be the first booking that you make.
Scott says the shortage is likely to extend beyond the summer and into next year. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.